You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you and good to be with our listeners out there.
Something that just came across the Business News Wire. Prime Minister Mark Carney is saying he will review the 2026 electric vehicle mandate the federal government was going to bring in, where a certain percentage of vehicle sales had to be electric vehicles.
Yeah, it sounds like they're beginning to back off because it was a highly impractical idea. The number of EVs suddenly on the road, which requires something like 10 nuclear power plants to be built to look after the demand for electricity. And, of course, the crazy politicians and bureaucrats who are on the bandwagon for this stuff, all they want to see is electric cars, and they never think of anything else. And it's a tragedy, actually. But, hey, if this is a sign that Ottawa is backing off on an extremely impractical enthusiasm, I welcome it, yeah.
Now, we'll take a look at some other headlines and something that you talked about. We know AI is the big deal now. Everybody's throwing billions of dollars into artificial intelligence. Does this remind you of the bubble of the 2000 dot-com bust? But you said this isn't the first time that we've had the threat of a so-called dot-com bubble.
Yeah. So I've got a headline here somewhere that we haven't seen anything like this since the dot-com bubble with 1980 or something like that. But there was a great financial bubble that culminated in 1873. And the high-tech darling of the time was Western Union Telegraph. Hey, that was the stuff. Not only did they provide telegraph, but also they came up with the ticker tape thing for Wall Street, where you could have the ticker tape going on a little device in your office. So, hey, can you get any more exciting than that? And then, of course, now this is just off my memory and I haven't looked at it for a while, but that late September or early October, Western Union fell 40% in 1 week. It was a horror show. So that's what you can get with these high-tech faddish stocks. Well, 1929, the big high-tech leader was Radio Corporation of America, RCA. Mm. And it got up to $125 or something like that. And the street was forecasting $3 a share earnings. Well, the stock went all the way down to, I don't know, $1.50 or something like that. And earnings disappeared. But here's what I like for popular music. They got back to $3 a share in sort of 56, 57. And guess where the big money was coming from? Elvis Presley.
Oh.
Yeah. He, of course, those who were buying the stock in 1929 on $3 a share had no concept of Elvis Presley in 1956. So, yeah, these fads on high-tech stocks have always been around, and even one from the 1772 bubble in London, and Samuel Johnson, the great man of letters, wrote a line about people chasing after newfangled ideas. You know, don't quote me on this one. Now, just from memory here. So, yeah, high tech has always been part of every great financial bubble. And the first big great bubble was the South Sea bubble of 1720. And they had a lot of high-tech stuff there, too. So fascinating to read.
And talking about history here, we have the possibility of a Carrington event back in September 1859. Giant solar flares hit the Earth, and they melted down the only high-tech at the time, the telegraph lines.
Yeah, they've got the engineers, electrical engineers have got pretty good handle on these things, but you can make something for the 100-year event, and then along comes a 200-year event and blows it all to hell. So, yeah, who knows what's going to happen with solar flares and things like that. So.
Well, Space Weather says the Earth is about to be pasted on Saturday with a major solar flare event. And that means satellites might malfunction, yeah. And without access to atomic clocks for precise timings, mobile phone networks could crash. And, of course, if the solar flare is big enough, unless you have surge protectors on everything,
yeah,
which I happen to do because lightning next door to me once knocked out most of my electronics.
Whoa.
You know, our whole system could be knocked down again. Yeah. Hopefully they've put a lot of circuit breakers in.
Should I get a lead blanket and just stretch out on the cower on the bed or curled up in the fetal position with a lead blanket?
Your tinfoil helmet will be good enough, Bob.
No, we call it tinfoil, but it isn't. It's aluminum foil.
Yes.
And I don't think aluminum has got the density to really look after this one. So I'm going to look at. I'm going to look into getting a sheet of lead and making at least a hat for me to protect me. So.
Isn't gold dense enough to stop radiation?
Gold would be very good.
Yeah, make it a golden blanket,
sure.
Bob. It's more fun. A little expensive nowadays. But.
Nothing to it, yeah.
But you can hammer gold down to one molecule thick.
I know that you can get it very, very thin, but I didn't know down to one molecule.
Yeah, all those gold windows you see, like the former Greater Vancouver Regional District buildings.
In the gold.
Yeah, so the light comes through, but it reflects. Now, we'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught your eye.
Yeah.
Valuations are extreme. Navigating a bubble, that's from Zero Hedge. I think we're talking about the bubble of everything.
Yeah, it's the everything bubble.
How risky is it, Bob?
Well, the headlines and stuff we're getting are extremely exuberant. And fairly good momentum. Now, what we want to look at is 1929, where the action peaked, I think it was September 3rd, and in New York. And I checked with Ross on this just the other day, and it had a pretty big momentum surge in August. Then got your little high, well, the high end on September 3rd. And then it just quietly faded away, and then eventually it just crashed. And the whole decline into 1932 amounted for the Dow to some 87%. Again, a number from memory. But what we want to note is that in that 1929 bubble, New York market was still the outlying market. The world's financial center was in London, and the Financial Times Index was the senior stock index. So here, and it only fell in half. So here we are now. With action, you could say bubble-ending action. But New York now is the senior exchange and the senior economy. So One can say that the probability is the Dow will fall in half, rather than the 87% hit. Now, there will be lesser exchanges around the world will get the full hammer, and that's going to be very nasty. And but at the moment, everybody's quite buoyant. They are indeed.
China major bridge collapses. Shocking response from the developer. The background here, railway bridge under construction over a major river in China has killed at least 12 workers. Four others are missing. And it's probably worse than that because this is from their official state media outlet. So, yeah, well, so in places like that, you know, it's probably a lot worse than they admitted.
Well, the point is to show that the wonder of wonders, China's economy and managed by communists in Beijing, hey, it's not really working that well. It's a tragedy where people are killed. So, yeah, I put that one in mainly because too many people have been celebrating China and Beijing and communist government. So, yeah.
Well, you said there was a shocking response from the developer. What's their, schist happens?
Well, a new building falls down. It's a disaster. Now, also, they built some whole cities that are empty. So those, and they're not being maintained, so those empty city apartment towers will have to be taken down as well, or maybe China becomes too broke to actually do it, and they'll just sit there and fall apart all on their own.
Well, now, that reminds me of that giant military parade they held in Beijing for the benefit of the dictators of Russia and North Korea, along with the leader of China. Does this remind you of what countries do when their economies are about to collapse? They start getting very jingoistic, start demonstrating their military. And I'm reminded of the Falklands War back in the early 1980s, where Argentina invaded the Falkland Islands owned by Britain.
Yeah.
And it was to divert the population's attention away from the fact their economy had collapsed.
Yeah.
Would China do this with Taiwan?
Well, I don't know about Taiwan, but yeah, there's an amusing story with the that Falklands issue. There was guys I knew here in Vancouver had got a hold of about 125 foot long seagoing tugboat. I mean, this thing is really big, and it had originally been steam powered, but it at some point in its lengthy career, they'd put in diesel. So with the start of the problem in Falklands, they got one of the guys of the group that owned this boat sent a telegram to the First Sea Lord in London describing a boat, describing his mates, and said they would be down there to give them a hand, you know, tongue in cheek. And then after the whole thing was over, the Admiralty in London sent these guys a very, very kind thank you note written very cleverly. I used to remember what it was about, but I can't anymore. So even the British Admiralty in times of stress can remember an incident and then respond in an amusing fashion. I was very pleased with that. So,
headline from Zero Hedge. Australia's largest rare earth miner plans U.S. expansion to compete with China.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, rare earths, that's the buzz phrase now. And but it's interesting that that Australian firm is now going to do an expansion in the U.S. So, hey, you know, fanciful stuff.
Now, left out of this equation, everybody talks about the rare earths in Greenland. Canada has rare earths. Saskatchewan and Quebec are developing rare earth ventures as well.
Oh, yeah. You scratch around, there's an awful lot of geology in Canada where you can find, this, you know, whatever you want, you know. So, yeah, I worked on a property on a lake north of Yellowknife, and that was the beryllium-bearing pegmatites. And beryllium was great, the big promotion back then, going to be used in everything and whatnot. But, gee, it was a wonderful summer for me. May to the middle of August. Loved it.
We'll take a look at more headlines with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Headline from Zero Hedge: when Washington gets out of the way, energy workers deliver results.
Yep. Yep. Of course, this is what Trump's trying to do, is get them into the field and drill, baby, drill. It's good stuff.
Now, I've heard from people in the energy business that there's no incentive to drill right now, though, because prices are so low for gasoline, natural gas.
Yeah, they are low, and they could get even lower before, well, I mean, nobody's talking about the recession that has probably started, and then things are going to get nasty for most commodities. So,
well, President Trump fired the person who released the labor statistics last month. He was disappointed that only 22,000 jobs had been created. They've just released their figures today. 22,000 jobs created, and U.S. unemployment is up. Is that person going to get fired, too?
I don't know. The one I like here is inside Vancouver's luxury housing market collapse. Why millionaires are losing millions.
A friend of the show, Alan Mark Angel, Canada's most successful real estate agent, focuses on West Vancouver, where, you know, he has sold to people like Bob Hope and so on. And he says he has never seen the luxury house market in Vancouver. And West Vancouver, by the way, is the richest community in Canada. He said he's never seen it this bad, and he has tracked statistics since they started tracking statistics.
Yeah, I was right, of course, 1980 is a long time ago, but yeah, we're writing it up then, and the high-end items in British properties fell one-third of the high. And even an undeveloped property lot in downtown Vancouver, its projected price fell to one-third of the high. And then I checked with a real estate agent out in Kerrisdale here, which is nice middle-class homes. They fell in half. So high-end houses in Vancouver falling to one-third? I think so. And that would also hold for Toronto as well, you know, where it's been hot. And the prices are broken and are in decline. And there's nothing anybody can do about it.
From the Financial Post, there's a new force driving the Canadian dollar, and it's pure gold.
Yeah. Yeah, the real price of gold has been going up. That makes mining the stuff even more profitable. Forget about the U.S. dollar quote. It's what really counts is the real price, and that then factors into the cost of mining the stuff. So I keep track of it with taking gold's price and dividing it by the CRB commodity index, and the assuming that the CRB index is a proxy for mining costs. Hey, it is. And it has been acting very well. So anybody mining the stuff, their profit margins would be improving. And then this also enhances, you don't have to be in production because it enhances the value of gold deposits out there that one would explore for. So a rising real price of gold is very good for the industry. And it's a feature of the transition from a great bubble to a great depression, is gold's real price goes down a little as the bubble concludes. This happened. And then it starts up, and it has been rising. So that's working very nicely. Gold miners can do very well for maybe 10, 12 years, but within this you'll have the usual business cycle, 3 to 4 year business cycle, and things get hot and then things get cold. But each of the boom part, or the recovery parts of the business cycle, not so strong, and each of the recessions will be, oh, this is worse than we thought. So that kind of thing, yeah.
Now, from Zero Hedge, we'll wrap this up. The headline is, I am so effing sick of watching politicians get rich while they're in office.
Yes, indeed. That is the right attitude. And I had thought that President Harry S. Truman, he'd had a menswear store business in Missouri, and I thought that he was free of that greed, but then I looked up the Wikipedia on him, and he got into politics in order to make money. And by the time for his retirement, he had a lot of money, very comfortable, of course. Yeah, so this is the thing. They're in the political game not to act for the people, that's down the list, but to make money. Of course, quite the opposite to Trump. It's costing him money to be in office. So, yeah.
Well, one of the big debates here, like in Greater Vancouver, the Premier of BC, David Eby, makes $218,000 roughly. The mayor of Richmond made over $700,000, and my position is, why should a civic politician make more money than the premier? Shouldn't he be the gold standard?
Jim, that's absurd. I mean, something really stinks with that one.
The Prime Minister of Canada makes $406,000 a year. The Leader of the Opposition, $399,000. I think it makes Pierre Poilievre, who tells us everything's broken, that he's worth about $7 million because the only job he has ever held is a Member of Parliament.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, it's made him rich.
I'm not certain what your estimate on his net worth is.
Well, that was just a quick Google search.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's making $300,000 a year. You invest it right. He's been doing that his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Bob, you could turn that into a nice nest egg.
One could indeed, yes. And so he should.
And I always wonder, though, with these politicians who, like at Parliament Hill, they have a subsidized cafeteria where you can, get a full steak dinner for, I don't know, $12 or something. They have no idea what the real cost of living is for the average Canadian. $12, that'll get you the gristle off a steak.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Jim.
Yeah, maybe. And if minimum wage is so good, how come politicians don't work for it?
Yeah. Now, I talked to you about this. I was going through old clothes that don't fit me anymore, and I found my rack of ties there. And there must be 50 ties, and I know that most of them probably I paid $100 for. Yeah. I know there were some ties I paid $200 for. So
wow.
That's a lot of money in ties, but the one I forgot about entirely. It's a financial theme all the way through it. Dow Jones average. Now, this is at 63.21 on the Dow close. And then they've got images that are fun and a list of the quotes for the exchanges for Argentina, Australia, Belgium, etc. So it's my financial tie, and I'm really quite pleased with it. Maybe I should get an image done of it, and I can send it to you and share it.
I'm also, when I was a professor at the BC Institute of Technology, one of my students called me the man of a thousand ties.
Because oh, so you are a tie guy.
Oh, yeah. I've got a huge collection.
Yeah.
But the one people like best is the Mona Lisa. Tourists from Japan have taken my picture when I'm wearing the Mona Lisa tie.
Yeah.
So I always tell them, no, I painted it myself.
Yeah, well, I don't have a Mona Lisa tie, but I got my financial tie that I really, once I stumbled on it, I thought, oh, this is fun. So I've got my financial tie.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Jim, good to be with you and good to be with your listeners out there. And we look forward to getting together next Friday.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.